out for whatever. First of all, diarrhea, but then TH maybe. Oh, yeah, yeah. So you really mean there is a God? I mean, really? Who can hear me right now? And who does? Well, when I grew up, I learned that this was just a fantasy. Something people imagined in the past. Something primitive. But then I eventually realized that the modern science had promised to replace God and religion was so and is still so faulty. It doesn't hold up. So, I mean, I philosophically accept a God, but also I spoke to God and I did get an answer. So I got pretty convinced that there is someone there. Someone who is my friend, someone who loves me, who cares about me, and who would even take the trouble to be with me, listen to me, and it's just, you know, still almost too much to take in. Although I still, after 45 years or so, feel that God is with me and takes care of me. I mean, I had enough proof. I mean, I'm convinced. Now I decided way back to become a servant of God, servant of Krishna. Who to me is the best name for God I've ever came upon, and Bhagavan and Govinda, beautiful. Came there from some humble devoted souls. From out there on the countryside of West Bengal. Who just happened to, and I really still honestly see and believe with all my intelligence and heart that this Chaitanya Bhakti is the most beautiful form of spirituality, if I just say so. Well, I have ever come upon, and if the same is found in other places of this world, then all glories, because it is beautiful. That we all of us have a deep personal loving relationship with God. A servant or friend or sweeter, ever sweeter relationships. And this, I mean, that this whole existence, I mean, there is existence here, right? For some reason, there is an existence here. Now, the voidist, materialist, physically, whatever they're called, who call themselves scientists, given a completely absurd theory of how this existence came about and what it ultimately is. Just dead matter. Popping out of nowhere. And if they tell me when I question the logic and the scientific validity of this, viability, whatever you call it, if then they then say that, well, you are too ignorant to understand this, then what shall I say? And please explain it to me. How all this can just come from an infinitesimal point that all of a sudden exploded and made all this, including me sitting here thinking. It's utterly absurd. And I can't believe how people can believe in this. And now that led me to believe when I was young. People in general on planet Earth these days are fairly stupid. I'm just looking at my life here. I mean, I thought it was a teenage thing that we grew up and thought everybody, all the grown-ups, were stupid. The leaders of the world were stupid. People in my hometown, they were just, sorry. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, watching TV of others doing that, and football and hockey. But my big question there is that those who call themselves scientists, do they themselves really believe in that? And in this ridiculous evolution theory of Darwin that just doesn't hold up, and a kid can understand it. Because the most important feature of that evolution theory, namely that every little anyway, that is quite clear. I don't want to get into that now. I'm just testing my own convictions here. There is obviously intelligent control, a structure, as David Bohm puts it, an information structure at the bottom of this existence that you could say contains the laws of nature that we see govern everything here. Now, some today have even tried looking at them as algorithms instead, which is interesting. I mean, to me, it seems clear and obvious beyond any doubt that it is something around in that direction that where the truth is. There is an underlying information structure and intelligence, and intelligence means mind, means consciousness behind this whole existence. And of this I am convinced for several reasons. One, well, it simply makes sense to me once I learned it or came upon this. And two, this is the world as described by the Srimad Bhagavatam and the this beautiful knowledge of India and other cultures, and it all ties together into a cohesive and crystal clear worldview that harmonize all the different cultures and religions and people and living beings in a way that is beneficial for everyone. I've been looking at this mating opposition and arguments and philosophical level, this and that. I've sat there in night radio and with people talking philosophy and being challenged all the time and fighting back and having to question these questions over and over again. I mean, I can really say that I have I think so. Looked at things from all kinds of different points of view that there basically are available to us at least, and after all this year getting a bit clearer about what's going on, and that indeed Krishna is here, God is here, and number whatever I drifted off into here, but number three reason for my conviction is that the smartest people in science, quite a few of them, and I'm talking the biggest, all of them, each and every one of them Nobel Prize winners, namely the quantum physicist founder fathers, they all came to that same conclusion. That consciousness is fundamental, and this plugs it right into the Vedantic philosophy, which they could see, but actually, as I can see at least, right into the Vaishnava philosophy too. Because Vedanta is ultimately resting on Bhakti Siddhanta. And that's the beauty of it, because then everything ultimately when we follow all the leads here, both from modern science, they're going into the following the footsteps, so to speak, of those, I would say, most cutting-edge scientists there were, the founders of quantum physics, who just started wandering over there to India and studied the Vedanta. Schrödinger did. Bohm did, I think the others too. And then on the other side, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. The Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, I mean the most amazing library of knowledge that I have ever seen by far anywhere else. And I'm so happy that Prabhupada came over and gave us all this. Wow, what a sacrifice he did. What surrender, what faith. And speaking about teaching by your own example, my goodness. Thank you, Prabhupada. And all the other wonderful devotees who helped bring me and others of us, all of us, back to Krishna again, after being really lost here in this weird dream world. So now, I'm like, I've been speaking like this so many times, as giving a lecture on a days in a temple room or talking into a microphone and some radio broadcast. But I'm talking to myself now to really look at my life and because to me it's like it's time for a new next step, which I've been kind of slowly taking now during a couple or 2-3 years or so. These big steps in life take time. And therefore really can believe in God, but that word belief or faith, it always implies that maybe there is no God, right? I believed means I could also doubt. Maybe it could be or be not. So that in itself tells us about a certain level of realization that is at the beginner stage, right? And it's completely natural, normal. But then there are other stages of higher level of conviction and realization and insight. And I mean, that really means that we don't just think of things in a certain way, philosophize about it, or even, as in some cases, well, quite common in religions, that you form a group around that. Look, we have this common interest here. It's an interest group, which is really nice, of course, but it can also easily happen that the group becomes the cause. The membership of the group, it becomes a social thing. But really, and then, you know, you're just a member of that social group and then that's it. You do the rituals and the looks and so on. But really, oh my the Guru is there too. And I know I sound again like I'm giving a lecture, but I mean, really, the Guru is there to open our eyes with a torchlight of knowledge or something like that, isn't it? Until then, one day we stand here with Krishna, with Radha and Krishna, for me, Srisri Gandharvika Giridhari. It's just my way of thinking, or Radha, Krishna, Gonitai. Radha Madhava. And I want and try to serve them the best I can and to love them, and also gradually realizing that this means to love Krishna and all his expansions, meaning everyone who live, big or small, smart or stupid, even myself. Because, I mean, it sounds like philosophy, right? This is now I'm describing the Vaishnava philosophy, but I'm really, and I'm still talking to myself because this is where I am now. It's really something that we have to take from being a philosophy to being the reality we live in and see and relate to and deal with. In other words, I am here dealing with a wonderful, I mean, infinitely and inconceivably wonderful person or persons. So sure to say that God is one, that everything is God and everyone is God, is of course correct. But you got it there in the Bhagavatam. To repeat those verses a bit. What is it? Brahmati paramapita bhagavani iti shabdati that tattva vidas tattva kyanvam brahmati paramapita bhagavani iti shabdati. Yeah, that's, I just don't remember where it's found. Am I quoting words? Anyway, I'm getting tired. It's like, you know, there's a person standing here that is your friend and who is as close to you as anyone could ever be. And that person is standing there in the room next to you. And you sit looking at it in another direction, kind of closed up in, or how to say, preoccupied with yourself and thinking and looking into philosophical thoughts and all of that about that person, and you're saying, I'm convinced now there is a person standing to me next to me here in this room. I mean, you would be crazy. So that's how crazy I feel. I sound like a sweet, because I can say that the only solace for me is that in that is the realization that there are those who are crazier than I. Oh boy, in Sweden we say this, that when I think about it, there are those. It's a good Swedish joke, actually. And I think about that there are those who have it much worse than I, and I feel much better. Oh, Krishna, you are here. Bhagavan and Govinda, however you want to relate to me, and all these, you know, if someone listens to this except you and me, at least I could say it to everyone else and might listen one day that, yeah, here we are. And, you know, here's Krishna. Let me introduce you. He's the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, okay? The sun that we are all raised from, and you know, we are raised from the same sun, we are twigs on the same tree, so we're kind of family, all of us. So let me introduce myself, your relative, so and so. And then we could maybe start acting as a family too, however distant or close we might. Feel, because that's really up to us, isn't it? You want to, you know, you see a person in town somewhere and you happen to bump into each other. You bump into people here and there, right? I mean, meet people here and there in little daily short meetings, conversations. So you go out somewhere and but then sometimes we decide, this person I want to learn to know more. Not just a brief acquaintance, but a friend and so on. So again here we're talking these rasas, these relationships that we have between each other. And that we have to Krishna, to God. And this is all going on right here, right now, always. And I am speaking faithfully in line with the Vaishnava Siddhanta here. When we just realize that and start acting on that level, in that realization, in that cosmos, or level of the cosmos, I guess that's what they call Shuddha Sattva. Which really just means we're out of the dream and the fog and the illusion and the darkness and all that, which, well, really is just a fantasy, because fantasy we have, right? It's beautiful, it's creative, we can make. And that's what we do all the time, we create things. Isn't it? Look at what humans are doing here. Factories and projects and building, and now we made this fantastic media that we can all tell stories to each other and share knowledge and information and become enlightened finally. That which we sometimes talk about as an honorable goal, to be enlightened. So that's what we're talking about. That's what I'm kind of starting to see, to see the light there. It's not just some philosophy you talk about. It's a path we walk, and then we have to expect that at one point it gets brighter. And even, I mean, as I'm sitting here, I'm 68, and I can just describe my own situation honestly and straightforwardly. I mean, I have no need to pretend anything or to hide anything. I feel the way that, and I've been feeling like that for years, the way you even find described in the, I think, examples from the Indian philosophy, that when Krishna, from the Vaishnava philosophy, that when Krishna, when God starts to, we start just a little bit to remember God, to turn towards God, such as taking up this bhakti yoga, which really means to turn to God as a friend, with some love, as you do to any person. Okay, you like someone, you want to know someone more, then you turn to that person and you act personally and friendly and nicely, ultimately lovingly towards that person. Isn't that what we do and what we want and what works? So you start doing the same with God, and then you one day, well, that's what the example is. Although you might find yourself walking there in a dark, big, lonely forest, where you said the dark night of the soul and all that. I mean, it seems to be something we all go through at one point in life. Then, and we look within for shelter and for meaning and for, because out there is nothing much to find shelter in. So that's how life can be here. Then there is that light coming out there. And just as there's this little dim light coming out above the horizon, even quite some time before the sun rises, and then you see clearly, so much fear disappears, so much of the bewilderment disappears, and you don't feel lost anymore. There's hope. And that's what I have been feeling for the past couple of years. And it's just beautiful. Even if you just see that shine there, and I know many people have the same experience today. But then one day the sun appears above the horizon, and it's not just a light anymore, it's someone there, as personal as I am. And as soon as that personal relationship is realized, I mean, again, as soon as you turn towards that person standing next to you in your room or even in your heart, the problem is gone. It can happen in a second. But probably if we could do that right now completely, then we wouldn't be able to function in this world anymore. We would just fall over, lie there and laughing and crying, and the way we hear that devotees do when they meet Krishna. So yeah, I mean, Krishna, I mean, again, I'm talking philosophy, but to me it's a reality that Krishna shows as much, you know, appears to us as much as we want that. I mean, it's quite logical. If I stand next to you in your room and you ignore me, you're busy doing other things, and I just go somewhere else or stay away. I mean, if I see that you are completely crazy and some lost in some mad fantasy, I may stay there just to make sure you don't, you know, kill yourself. But I'll stay away, otherwise I may get it also. It's just how it works among us, so why not between us and God? So it's actually, I mean, if you feel fearful about what would happen if God would just stand here in the room next to you all of a sudden, more real than any person you ever encountered or met, making you think that you could doubt the existence of everyone you ever met and everything you ever saw, but not doubt the existence of this person. And then you fall on the floor crying and laughing and just overflowing with love and awe and all of that. I mean, I'm a little scared at the thought. Gosh, it would maybe be too much for me. So, therefore, it's, you know, it's okay to take it naturally, isn't it? And that's part of the sweetness too, in a way. I don't know. Skynda långsamt, we say in Swedish. I mean, it's okay. Some of us, and I was one of them, I don't know, just wanted to jump immediately, as soon as possible, to that highest, purest platform of Prema. When it's going to come, next year or 10 years. I remember when I first came to this Krishna conscious moment, I thought that those who had been around for 3 years, they were kind of pure devotees, basically. What to speak of 10 years and being gurus or sannyasis, they were just beyond any doubt pure devotees of God, who had Krishna prema and everything, top level. And so you think like that, and you think that's where I should be in 5 or 10 years. So it became a bit of a game or a role play or pretension. I mean, we thought this is how you do things, you just emulate them. But I guess that's what Prabhupada said when he meant we shouldn't imitate or, you know, be sahajas or whatever. But we also shouldn't be smart as people just going through the movements and rituals and the social thing there, as if that's what it was all about. Because that's either mundane, just some social career, of a position and respect and all whatever, or some kind of impersonal mukti thing, so yes, if I should declare my religion or whatever I should call it, I'm a buck, though. And I'm so happy that I can say that and be where I am now. So I have no idea why I'm talking these things, but again, it's I'm thinking of diary here now, basically. So anyway, I'm speaking here to myself about my convictions, just testing myself. What I know now, with all my heart, all my intelligence, and my feelings and intuition and logic and reason, everything, he said, I'm a servant of God, I'm a servant of Bhagavan, I'm a servant of Krishna, of Govinda. Whatever other names you can think of, I am here spending the years I have, or the time I have remaining here, whatever, however long it is, to serve the dearest servant of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada. All the wonderful devotees being there with him, standing there with him among them together, just trying to help all of us who are, I mean, admittedly, obviously, lost in this world. I mean, look at how bewildered people are here. Some don't even think we existed before we took birth here. That we are, all that we are, is just built up from two cells that started to divide. And that when this body stops functioning, we don't exist at all anymore. But apart from the fact that there are thousands and probably millions of testimonies from people having clinically died and then left their bodies, gone somewhere else, met their own ancestors and coming back again while their body was all clinically dead. No brain activity, no heart, nothing going on. I mean, I don't know why I'm going into this, but it's for me now. I just need to test and check everything. That is a state of bewilderment, of ignorance. And when I grew up, I learned that in the past, humans were ignorant, terribly ignorant. They were primitive. They were like animals. So the idea of humans being or having been at least primitive is acceptable, right? So I think I'm here together with many people today who see what I'm saying and who look at humanity at large and then, you know, it's time for us to evolve a bit here, you know, to come to another stage here, a new level. And sorry, but those of you who refuse to, because that's, I think, really what it's about is a refusal for different reasons to come along. We view you a bit as being primitive. Because many of those beliefs you have and much of that life you live just doesn't make sense. And I would say, I mean, who grew up with, I would say, the old-time religion slowly dying, Christianity here in Sweden, and embracing science as it came and saved us. I would say now, after a lifetime well spent, that I consider that pre-science, pre-materialism time as, I mean, as little as I like that, those kind of old religions, institutional religions and so on, I would say that people back then were in many ways, and I know some people will argue with me, better off and spiritually less primitive and I mean, intellectually, I don't know, but because what today people are sophisticated with all kinds of knowledge and reading these books, and but some people, they are quite ignorant and dull and not reading anything and just consume idle entertainment all the time. So, I mean, there is a very low level present if we were to look at it in a very crass and unsentimental way. Just trying to see it as it is, of humans who are basically just consumers. And as Prabhupada said, behaving like animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But it's an animalistic civilization. It's a humanity that doesn't evolve but goes the other way, really. And sure, there is an evolution, but that evolution it's really a consciousness evolution, not an evolution by some mystic, magical means among little particles that just build themselves into the most fantastic machines one could even not fathom or imagine, because we still don't know much about what's really going on down there at the very fabric of this existence. But you know, I mean, I'm sitting and philosophizing now for myself, and it's nice. I don't even know if this recorder is on. I don't care. I mean, some people, they don't philosophize like this, but they are in it. They just, yeah. They are just there. I mean, you can offer a flower or a little fruit or a little water to God with love and devotion, and there you are, top level of perfection. It's not a competition for some gold medal or silver and bronze medal. It's just each one of us have our winner position there. Which again doesn't mean that the others have to go be lower, but simply that there we are standing on that top, meaning that here am I, and I am satisfied. I'm satisfied with myself. I don't need to prove it anymore. And I am me. This, I guess, is what self-realization means. And that's the real winner. I have a friend who told me, because he was a world champion in military, what do you call it? This thing where you compete in five different things. Anyway, some military sports. And he told me when I stood there on that podium on the number one box, receiving that world champion medal, and I just thought, what's now? What's next? What should I do now? So he turned to Krishna. I mean, I can really honestly say I'm so grateful to all of you devotees who I had the fortune to meet and make friends with. And I'm also so sorry if I, you know, for the times I have offended you or hurt you, whatever. We were young and inexperienced. Trying to somehow or other take in all these completely new ideas for our lives, from everything in our lives. From how to go to the bathroom to how to get married. Anyway, that's it for now. Oh gosh.